Benjamin Franklin Gates, you are undertaking the duty of the family Gates to find the most spectacular treasure in history. It grew throughout the ages and moved across continents until it was hidden by America's founding fathers, who left clues to the treasure's location right before our eyes.
The unfinished pyramid, the all-seeing eye,
are telling us something. Keeping this treasure safe, Benjamin, is your destiny.
You're treasure hunters, aren't you?
We're more like treasure protectors.
All his life, Benjamin Gates has searched for a treasure no one believed existed.
Don't you get it, Ben? A treasure is a myth.
Dad, I refuse to believe that.
But what he thought was the final clue...
108 years of searching and I'm 3 feet away.
...is only the beginning.
The Declaration of Independence.
You think there is a treasure map on the back of the Declaration of Independence?
The map is invisible.
Why would we make this up?
Where's your proof?
We don't have it.
Riley, get down!
Did Bigfoot take it?
Word about the map is bound to get out. Ian's going to try to steal it.
90 seconds.
The only way to protect the Declaration is to steal it.
What?
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Ben?
From producer Jerry Bruckheimer and director John Turteltaub.
It is surrounded by guards and video monitors and little kids on their 8th grade field trip.
You will go to prison, you know that, right?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, go!
Get out of there. Get out of there now.
He's got the bloody map.
This Thanksgiving, the clues of 10 generations...
There's more to the riddle.
...will reveal a mystery 20 centuries in the making.
Who wants to go down the creepy tunnel inside the tomb first?
Tell me what the next clue is.
What do you see?
Nicolas Cage. National Treasure.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriscio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good. I think today's a big episode.
Yeah, Mike, we finally made it. This is a big one. There are a few movies that jump to mind when people, particularly of our generation, think of Nicolas
right.
Cage, right? You might jump to his recitation of the ABCs in Vampire's Kiss, or the Not the Bee scene in The Wicker Man. Those are, like, pretty big, like, internet meme scenes. But anyone who was around 10
right.
years old in the year 2004 probably first knew Nicolas Cage in the family-friendly Disney adventure film National Treasure. Mike, we made it. Yeah, so this movie has become sort of improbably like a generational touchstone for people our age. Yeah, I haven't asked everybody in my life if they've seen National Treasure, but I think if I did, they would all say yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You can just assume they have. You don't even need to ask.
Exactly. And I've never really understood why the movie has stuck with so many people. Like, it's come up in conversation a surprising amount over the course of my lifetime. It wasn't that well received when it first came out. You know,
what? There's no way.
It has a 44% of Rotten Tomatoes right now, Mike. That's what I can tell you.
For shame.
Roger Ebert said in his review that it was so silly that the Monty Python version could use the same script line for line.
Wow, what a slam.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it did not get a ton of critical acclaim when it came out. It was, however, a pretty big hit for Disney and Nicolas Cage. On a budget of $100 million, this movie made about $358 million. And it would, of course, go on to spawn a sequel, National Treasure Book of Secrets, in 2007. So it was
right.
a pretty big hit. There was a potential franchise being made out of the National Treasure movies, and they kind of abruptly stopped after two. That always seemed kind of strange to me. I always felt like there could have been more these movies.
I wonder if it has anything to do with pirates. I don't remember what the timeline for that franchise is, but I feel like they're kind of similar silly adventure just in genre movies, and they may have decided to go with the pirate movies instead.
Yes, also both Jerry Bruckheimer productions, to throw that out there as well. But I think what kind of happened is that John Turteltaub, who's the director of these National Treasure movies, also directed The Sorcerer's Apprentice in 2010 with Nicolas Cage.
Uh-huh.
That movie was kind of a box office disappointment. And for some reason, that kind of put the damper on National Treasure 3. I feel like that might have been the case, which seems a little odd to me because it had nothing to do with, you know, National Treasure.
I think also we're approaching the precipice of Nicolas Cage's bankability, particularly in 2010, I think, and when Sorcerer's Apprentice came out.
Even that was kind of the drop-off point for Nicolas Cage, is what you're saying, yeah.
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 As far as Disney hanging a franchise on him.
That is entirely possible. Now, I hadn't seen this movie since probably around the time it came out. Mike, I don't know about you. When was the last time you've seen National Treasure?
The last time I've seen National Treasure, not halfway through on TNT, I can't remember.
Okay.
But it's always one of those movies that's on in the middle of the day or something like that.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I definitely saw it in theaters.
Yes, yeah.
And I think I saw it once more on DVD a few months after that, probably a rental from Blockbuster, because it was 2004. And
Block what?
No. Block Booster? Is that what you're saying? You're saying Block Booster? And watching it again now, you know, it's been roughly 12, 13 years since I've actually seen the movie. I don't think I've even seen it on cable since it came out, because I don't really watch a ton of movies on cable.
Oh, excuse me.
Sorry, while I have to go and eat some caviar in my gold-plated car. Watching it again, I was reminded why I dug it so much when I was a kid. You know, I was really into American history when I was 10 years old, and I was really into Indiana Jones at the same time, and this movie just mashed them together.
You ever loved big, crazy conspiracies and funny quips?
Yeah. This is the movie for that kid. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
And it did so while having some pretty solid action scenes and being pretty funny along the way. Now, National Treasure reunites Nicolas Cage with Blockbuster producer extraordinaire Jerry Bruckheimer, who so far has been a major voice on Nicolas Cage films The Rock, Con Air, and Gone in 60 Seconds. So this is their fourth collaboration together. And the long-standing rumor surrounding this movie is that it was made to get a jump on the film adaptation of The Da Vinci Code.
Wow. Yeah, I would totally believe it.
That totally would make sense. The book came out in 2003, a year before National Treasure came out, but supposedly it was being optioned for a movie before it was published, and Jerry Bruckheimer caught wind and wanted to beat it to theaters. And Jerry Bruckheimer denies that, of course, saying that the film was in development long before Dan Brown's book came out, but that he was thrilled for the novel's success because it might spur people into seeing his movie looking for a similar themed adventure. And in fact, the rumors appear to be false. Director John Turteltaub had been developing this project for a year before inviting Jerry Bruckheimer to join, and that was still 7 years before this movie was actually released.
Holy shit.
Yeah, sometimes movies take quite a long time to get made, Mike.
I've heard that.
Yeah. I am familiar with that concept. I do think, however, that the pending release of The Da Vinci Code was a deciding factor in getting this movie into production, though. So I think that definitely had an impact in terms of getting this movie made. John Turteltaub was known for a string of hits in the 1990s, including Three Ninjas.
Yo, wow. What a movie I haven't thought about in too many years. Wow, yeah, okay.
There it is. That's Three Ninjas. That was one of his movies. Cool Runnings is also a movie he directed. While You Were Sleeping with Sandra Bullock is another movie he directed. And Phenomenon with John Travolta is another movie he directed. Do you remember that movie?
I don't think I do, no.
As a side note, I once had a history teacher in high school who was obsessed with Phenomenon. And he once made us watch the first 40 minutes in class when he ran out of lessons to teach. I still have never seen the rest of the movie.
All right, that's fair.
But from what I remember, on a hot summer, like a hot, very close to the end of the school year day of seeing the first 40 minutes of Phenomenon, it wasn't bad. And as for Nicolas Cage, he was unsure about this movie, National Treasure, when he was approached with the material. He was intrigued, but he didn't think it was plausible that someone could steal the Declaration of Independence.
You know, that's what the FBI said.
And then he proved them wrong.
Yeah,
Turteltaub refuted that claim by telling Cage that that's what's interesting about the character, is that he's audacious and he's bold. And Cage knew that Jerry Bruckheimer always brings in technical advisors to make things as believable as possible, so there was that. And he says he also got to do it in a tuxedo, which was interesting to him as well.
I love the shrinking scale of those concerns. No one could possibly steal the Declaration of Independence. I can't do it. But I get to wear a tuxedo, so yeah.
So I'm in.
I love it.
Now, Nicolas Cage in this movie plays Benjamin Franklin Gates, a treasure hunter whose family has been after a fortune left behind by the Founding Fathers for generations. And Sean Mother Effin' Bean plays the villain in this movie, Ian Howe. Of course, he was Boromir in Lord of the Rings. He was Ned Stark on Game of Thrones. And IMDb Trivia notes that this is one of the few films in which Sean Bean does not die.
That's, yeah.
That is actual IMDb Trivia right there.
I love it.
And then, in addition to Sean Mother Effin' Bean, you got Harvey Effin' Keitel as the FBI agent, Peter Sedeschi. That was part of the fun of watching this movie again, is realizing how many like actors I love were in this movie that I watched when I was 10 years old. That was
yep.
Harvey Keitel plays FBI agent Peter Sedeschi, who is on Cage's tail throughout the film. And as a side note, Nicolas Cage would later go on to star in Bad Lieutenant Port of Call New Orleans, which is sort of semi-related to the Harvey Keitel movie Bad Lieutenant from 1992. So it's not quite a Cage reunion, but there is a Cage connection there.
Ooh.
So I wanted to bring that up.
Foreshadowing our future episode.
Exactly. And John Voight plays Cage's father, Patrick Henry Gates. And then you've got Cage's gang, Justin Bartha, otherwise best known as Doug, the guy who gets left behind in all the Hangover movies.
Holy shit. I was like, do I recognize this guy this much from National Treasure?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I always felt bad for him with the Hangover movies, because like the plot of the first Hangover is them looking for Doug, right?
Yeah.
And I, to be fair, just throw this out there, I've seen all three Hangover movies.
Wow.
Yeah, not due to any particular reason. I do enjoy the first Hangover. I think it's a solid movie. It's a solid comedy. Yeah. Hangover 2 is really interesting because it's exactly the same as the first movie, like beat for beat. Almost like line for line, it is almost exactly the same, just in a different location. And then the third movie is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. It is garbage.
Slam.
But yeah, anyway, so Justin Bartha plays Doug in those movies, and I always felt bad for him because he always gets left behind. Like, he is the unsung hero of the Hangover franchise. You know, he's always,
yeah.
Like, he's supposed to be part of their friend group in those movies, but in all three movies, they have to find an excuse to get rid of Justin Bartha because he was the one they were looking for in the first movie, so they can't like mess with the formula and have him in on the fun. You know, it's
yep.
So I wanted to bring that up and say, like, I'm sorry about that, Justin Bartha, but at least you had National Treasure in addition to the Hangover.
He's got that going for him.
Yeah, which is nice. And then he plays Riley Poole, and then Diane Kruger, in one of her first major American roles, plays Dr. Abigail Chase. She was also in Troy that same year, 2004, and she's likely most well-known as Bridget von Hammersmark in Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Bastards. I said that in Eli Roth's...
You try, yeah.
In his accent. But yeah, Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Bastards. She's a phenomenal actress. I love her, and I love seeing her pop up in things, and I love her in Inglourious Bastards. So it was cool to see her in this movie as well. And then Christopher Plummer appears in the opening scene as Cage's grandfather, John Adams Gates, which, of course, makes this a reunion for a movie we have not talked about in forever, The Boy in Blue, Mike.
Wow.
Right?
I don't even remember that.
You don't remember The Boy in Blue?
Oh, that Christopher Plummer.
That he was in it? He was...
Yeah.
The Boy in Blue had Cage, it had Christopher Plummer, it had the guy from American Werewolf in London. That was 86, I think. That was like episode 7 of this podcast.
Who can remember that far back, Mike?
That was almost 2 years ago.
Oh, shit.
We were but children back then. Our quest was so far ahead of us at the time, and now it's still pretty far ahead of us, but we're getting closer.
We had a studio back then and everything.
Yeah, it's nuts. And then there are some notable people in bit parts throughout this movie. I wanted to mention David Diane Fisher, known to me as the voice of Zaldin in the Kingdom Hearts games. He plays,
wow, what a deep cut.
Yeah, he plays Sean Bean's main henchman in this movie. Annie Parise from Law & Order and the new Netflix series Friends from College plays FBI agent Johnson, while Mark Pellegrino of shows like Supernatural and Dexter appears as FBI agent Dawes. And Jason Earls, who wowed the world as Miley Cyrus's older brother on the Disney Channel series Hannah Montana, appears in the opening flashback as young Thomas Gates.
Wow.
That is pretty wild.
What a star-studded cast.
I know. They got the older brother from Hannah Montana and everything. It's...
God damn it.
I mean, this was a few years before Hannah Montana had had premiered, I believe. But yeah, so that's...
This is the dry run.
Yeah, that was the dry run. Disney saw that and they're like, this is the guy. This is the guy who can be...
Make him the older brother in a thing.
And National Treasure was written by Jim Koof and Cormac and Marianne Wibberly. Now, Koof also helped write movies like Rush Hour and Operation Dumbo Drop. But what's most cool is a movie he wrote under an assumed name, under the name Bob Hunt. He was the screenwriter behind 1987 supernatural horror The Hidden with Kyle MacLachlan.
Mother of God.
Yeah, which we just watched as part of the Hudson Horror Show a few months back. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I had no idea that he was involved with this. So that's neat. And then the Wibberlys were also involved in films like Charlie's Angels Full Throttle and Bad Boys 2. So
just all the late 90s, early 2000s action movies.
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly. And this movie was produced by Jerry Bruckheimer at the height of his powers. This was around the time Pirates of the Caribbean had been a huge hit, as you said before. And it was directed by John Turteltaub 4 years after his previous film, Disney's The Kid, and 3 years before his next film, which was, of course, National Treasure, Book of Secrets. And in between, he was also an executive producer and director on the TV series Jericho, which I don't know if you ever watched that show. My mom was obsessed with it for like a couple of weeks.
I remember it being a thing, and I think it's one of those shows that like ended in the middle of a thing, like a season or something.
It was canceled after like 2 seasons, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it had like a fan campaign. Like it ended up being brought back for like a summer, and then it was canceled again, something like that. That was like around the time when like ratings still mattered quite a bit, but they like ratings. Networks hadn't really figured out how to measure ratings, you know?
Yeah.
You ever,
what is like, this recording on the DVR?
Yeah, I mean, DVRs had become a thing, and online viewing had become a thing, and so networks were still canceling shows for bad ratings, but they weren't, like, you know, they wanted to bring them back. Like, it was a very difficult time. That was the reason why NBC like didn't cancel shows for bad ratings, because they had nothing else to replace them with. Which is why shows like Parks and Rec and Community got like 6 and 7 seasons. Like, it's, you know,
right,
pretty cool. Like, so there is good stuff out of that period, but also, you know, stuff like Jericho got canceled. So there's that. And the IMDb plot synopsis for National Treasure reads: a historian races to find the legendary Templar treasure before a team of mercenaries. That's all I've got.
That's amazing.
That's all IMDb says. So, Mike, what are your overall thoughts on National Treasure?
Sorry, I'm just thinking, picturing the executive saying to the person that writes the synopsis, write a synopsis for this, you've only got 10 words. but anyway, my overall thoughts on National Treasure was, as we kind of alluded to, a pleasant surprise. I hadn't seen this movie in a very long time. In its full runtime, unedited for cable and stuff. Not that there's anything to edit out. But it's still a ton of fun. It's just a big, dumb, goofy Indiana Jones meets Disney meets American history stuff, like you said. And it's Gates, and I can't remember his name, so Riley. or Cage and Riley. Whatever.
Justin Bartha, but yeah.
Yeah, doing the straight man and the silly guy shtick for 2 hours while getting chased and shot at by Sean Bean. Like, what's not to like, pretty much?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I had only a very vague memory of National Treasure going into it again. Because, again, I hadn't seen it in, like, 12 or so years. So I barely remembered the movie, like, outside of, like, very, very small things. And I was all prepared for this not to hold up so well. Because the reception that it got critically when it first came out and stuff like that. And there are movies where generational nostalgia blinds people to the fact that they're not very good.
Right.
I would point to Hook for that one. I would point to Jumanji for that one.
Shut your whore mouth.
Hey, I like Jumanji. All right. But again, I caught that on cable kind of recently, and like, man, that does not, like, it looks bad.
Really? I haven't seen it in a very long time.
Or Space Jam is another one I would point to. But again, I love Space Jam, too. Like, there's generational nostalgia for some of these movies that I still really enjoy about them. But they're not good movies, you know?
Okay. All right.
And I was afraid National Treasure was going to be one of those movies. But I had a lot of fun, man, with National Treasure. This is a really breezy, light popcorn movie that throws together a pretty cool treasure hunt, some solid set pieces, funny characters, real-world history. It just propels along at a pretty good pace. And I don't think it's great by any means, but it's the kind of thing that sort of leaves you – it's the kind of thing that shortly leaves you after watching it. You know, it's not – there's not any particular scene where I was, like, floored by anything, nothing that I feel like I'll be thinking about years from now. But in the moment, I had a really good time watching this movie.
I think there is one scene, and I have no idea why – not even a scene, just a thing that has stuck with me. And I remember it from when I saw it the first time.
Yeah.
And it's when Cage uses a water bottle as a magnifying glass on the like $100 bill. And I have no idea why. It just, it seems to be one of those things that like stuck out in my mind as just weird. And it's just like in a movie full of weird things.
I actually have one scene in the movie that also always stuck with me for some reason. Like, it's the one scene that I remembered very vividly. I'll talk about that when we talk about like the scenes that stood out to us. But yeah, and it's another one where it's like, I have no idea why that stuck with me this long.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is this a thing 12 years later?
Yeah. Like, why do I remember the scene word for word? It's weird. but yeah, as we know, you know, Cage is a good action hero, and this plot for this movie kind of toes the line between nonsensical and smart, and can change between the two at a moment's notice. Like, this movie is redonkulous. It is crazy. This movie is essentially Indiana Jones meets Ocean's 11. And if that does not sound appealing to you, I don't think I want to know you, basically.
And unsubscribe.
Yeah, but as a side note, I does feel like this movie was a pretty clear influence on a couple of different video games. Uncharted, specifically. The Uncharted games. Sure. You know, I love the Uncharted games. They're some of my favorite games. But I had always I always kind of ascribed them to being more of an Indiana Jones ripoff. But watching National Treasure again, I was like, you know what? I feel like this is more of a National Treasure ripoff than anything else, the Uncharted games. But also, I think it had kind of an influence on the Assassin's Creed games, just bringing up the Templars and the Freemasons and all that stuff. I feel like the Assassin's Creed games have explored that same territory to pretty much the same effect as National Treasure.
It's funny. I remember that was one of the details that I had forgotten. Like, I knew that it was about the Declaration of Independence and the Freemasons and stuff, but I forgot that they, like, in the, you know, Christopher Plummer in his Christopher Plummer way narrates the gives us the exposition for why this is all happening,
right?
And about the Templars and all that stuff, because the Templars are one of my like favorite historical items. They're just so weird, like, just as an entity in the Crusades and all of that. So I was like, oh, once that happened, like, once they, you know, it's like within 3 minutes or whatever, I was like, oh man, like, I got all excited for this stupid movie. Nice. And then it didn't disappoint.
Yeah. So what did you think of Nicolas Cage in this movie, Mike?
Cage at his peak? Is that fair to say? Like, in his mainstream family action movie way? This is the most cagey, like, of all of the action movies, this is the, I feel like, oh man, I don't know how to phrase what I'm saying.
I think he does solid work here in this movie.
Yeah.
I don't think it's his best action role. I think you have to look for The Rock or Face Off for that.
Yes.
He mostly plays this one pretty straight. And I think that's kind of what you're talking, like, this seems like the most mainstream of Cage action movies.
I guess, yes, that's what,
like,
I'm trying to say.
This feels like Cage as, like, the height of being a box office draw.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what you're trying to go for there. But yeah, and I think he does a good job of playing straight. You know, he has really good chemistry with Justin Bartha and Diane Kruger, and I think that goes a long way for this kind of movie. And you know, so Justin Bartha kind of gets to play the wisecracking, like, quippy, funny guy, and Cage is mostly playing it straight. Cage has his share of, like, really funny moments. You know, in the way that he's, like, I feel like what's interesting about this character is that he's playing a geek, basically, in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's not something you see in a ton of action movies. And so, you know, you have that kind of thing. And I think that's something you see in The Rock as well, actually. His character in The Rock is kind of similar in that regard.
I was going to say, that's one of the things that, in my mind, I like to imagine that Stanley Goodspeed spends some time as after The Rock, and then ends up becoming Benjamin Franklin Gates somehow.
You think Stanley Goodspeed discovers who killed JFK?
Yeah, that's exactly why.
I think he quantum leaps
into the body of Benjamin Franklin Gates.
I love it. The shared universe. I love it. I do think the fact that Cage plays this role so straight, as opposed to Stanley Goodspeed, where he's kind of like more of an outsized character. I think the fact that he plays this role so straight kind of helps sell the ridiculousness of this movie in a way. There is, of course, the iconic line from National Treasure, with Cage just looking at the Declaration of Independence and going,
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
And people joke about that line as like a really silly line from an actor who's always acting silly. But I think in the context of the movie, it actually kind of works because Cage is so serious about it. And then it's followed up with Justin Bartha's like bewildered reaction to to that. Yeah. And every character is commenting on how ridiculous that plan is.
Yeah, I do think you're right that Cage playing the straight man for this insane not only helps sell like the gravity or situation of the situation, you know, like makes it more believable, but also lends believability to the like mystery and the treasure and stuff. Not only are they doing this like crazy we're gonna steal the Declaration of Independence thing, but like you also kind of want to know what the treasure, like you want to get to the treasure, right? Like and him actually believing in it and not being a silly goofy thief or treasure hunter helps propel that, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and I think I mentioned before that Cage's character is a kind of a geek in this movie, and you know, he's you know, a suave geek. He's, you know,
to wear a tuxedo.
Yeah. You know, action movie hero, Cage geek. But I think he sells the character's love of history really well, specifically in two scenes. There's a scene when they first see the Declaration of Independence in the museum, and he's reading it, and he's like reading it aloud to Justin Bartha.
180 years of searching, and I'm 3 feet away. Of all the words written here about freedom, there's a line that's at the heart of all the others. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future security. People don't talk that way anymore.
Never felt more patriotic in my entire life than watching Cage read the Declaration of
Independence. Did you stand up and cover your heart?
I did. And then there's the moment later on in the movie where they open the Declaration of Independence in Liberty Hall. And there's this like giddy moment of clarity from Nicolas Cage. And he pauses and says, like, last time this was here, it was being signed. And it's like this, like, you know, like life-changing moment for him. Like it's a really cool thing. And like Diane Kruger has like the same kind of reaction. It's I think really cool to see. And like, you know, you in action movies, a lot of times you have characters who are like soldiers or who are like, you know, fighters or whatever, but you rarely
too old for this shit.
Yeah. You or cops. Yeah. Or whatever. And I think it's very rare that you get to see somebody like an archaeologist, like Indiana Jones or, you know, a paleontologist like in Jurassic Park or somebody like Cage, in this movie, who is just, you know, an intellectual who is just kind of in on this adventure. And I think it's cool to see.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It makes it a lot more fun, I think, in some weird way.
Yeah, because you're like you're learning as well as being entertained.
Yeah, clearly everyone was a Freemason.
It's edutainment. Now,
God damn it.
I cannot believe you laughed so hard at that joke.
Oh, man.
Now, Mike, how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Cage play so far?
I think it is, I mean, the last couple movies we've kind of said that it's like the natural progression in some way. Of course, he goes for, he makes this family-friendly action movie. I mean, if, you know, he's been making action movies for, I don't know, a decade now by this point.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, a John Woo face-off action movie isn't the same thing in terms of that family friendliness.
It's not something,
right?
You take your 10-year-old to, yeah. It's
right, exactly. As a Disney PG-13 or PG, is this even PG-13? I don't even know.
I believe it's just PG.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you got The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, Gone in 60 Seconds, Wind Talkers. Like all of these movies are, you know, I think they're all rated R, and they're all, you know, for aimed at adults. This one's clearly more aimed at a family audience, so I think it does fit in with the action Cage role, the blockbustery Cage role, but it is clearly aiming at a different audience. Also, Nicolas Cage trying to steal something, but justifying that it was for the right reasons. Sounds a lot like Raising Arizona to me, Mike.
Wow. Yeah, you're not wrong.
I'm getting pretty good at coming up with ridiculous plot similarities.
I like it.
To previous Cage movies, so I'm pretty happy about that. Now, Mike, were there any moments or scenes in National Treasure that stood out to you? Anything you wanted to talk about?
Well, I already mentioned the water bottle as a magnifying glass, even though that's not a particularly interesting scene.
there are tiny flourishes in this movie that I think are really cool. There's one really cool transition early on, of a Christopher Plummer, you know, talking about the story of the Templars and the Freemasons, and it flashes back to Egypt. And when it does, it transitions, and you see the pyramid, and you see Christopher Plummer's eye above the pyramid as it's transitioning, and it looks like the eye on top of the pyramid on the dollar bill. It's exactly the symbol. And that's not something that the movie has shown you yet, but it will become significant later on. So I think that's a cool bit of, like, visual foreshadowing that the movie happens across.
I do remember there's a couple cool transitions in that montage. I think of, like, a cart tipping over and the treasure pouring out, and then it pans up from the treasure and we're in a different time period and stuff like that. But I think there's a particular sequence that I did really enjoy and I thought was cool is when it's during the theft of the Declaration of Independence, right? We have Riley out in the van, the guy at the computer for Nicolas Cage, and he's doing his tuxedo suave thief thing, and we're cutting back and forth between Sean Bean's crew trying to break in, and they're like the high-tech version. So there's a lot of tension there for me during that scene of we're cutting, jumping back and forth between the two crews, and Diane Kruger kind of putting all the pieces together that she thinks Cage is here to steal it, and like that, they add that in, and there's a lot of that whole sequence was pretty fun for me.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking about, like, everything about the stealing of the Declaration to the chase afterwards. It's pretty great, and you know, it has that kind of Ocean's 11 style cross cutting. Even before that scene, they have like the whole Ocean's 11 style thing where they're talking about all the security provisions of the Declaration of Independence, which like
it's straight out of Ocean's 11.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Declaration is not lowered into a mechanical
like, into a vault,
into, like a mechanical, like it goes into the floor and like it travels across a mechanical. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not the case.
I mean, it might be, though.
It might be. Who knows? That's the thing. I feel like there is a lot of historical facts thrown into this movie. At the same time, I feel like there's a lot of historical inaccuracy thrown into this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't researched like any of the stuff that has gone into it, so I can't say what is and isn't real. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say that one is not true.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting, though, that just at that time period, there was so much clamor for that kind of like alternative history, but not like just the Da Vinci Code specifically, and this kind of like fever for that type of story.
Yeah, and I mean, Uncharted also came out like 3 years later, and it kind of became a thing for a few years, which is a type of story that I really enjoy. I really like that kind of like using history to search for a hidden treasure kind of thing. It's a cool genre of film for me. Also, a part of that Declaration scene, it leads right into a car chase. Which apparently Diane Kruger did most of her own stunt work in that chase, which is kind of impressive. She dangles off the truck door in that scene.
For a long time.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So that's cool. And yeah, I think this movie is also pretty good at just making you go, ah, of course, to history facts that you knew nothing about. You know? Like there's a part where there's like a riddle that's like it references the Silence Do Good letters. And as soon as they mentioned like the Silence Do Good letters, I'm like, ah, of course it's the Silence Do Good letters, even though I had no idea what those were. It all makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I am a smart individual.
And I do love that they like kind of play on that in some way at the towards the end when Cage and John Voight like spin that Paul Revere rope out.
Right.
Because everyone just is like, yeah, like, duh. And then they just turn to each other like, well, we had to make something up.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So I did want to talk. You mentioned that you only had like that one scene that you remembered very vividly of Cage looking at the dollar.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to mention the only scene that I remembered really vividly from the movie. And I cannot tell you why I remember the scene so vividly. But even like before I started watching the movie, like I was trying to think back on National Treasure and I was thinking about it. And it was the one scene that came to mind. And it's the scene where Riley is really excited that he knew the history of daylight savings time.
You don't know this? I know something about history that you don't know.
I'd be very excited to learn about it, Riley.
Oh, hold on one second. Let me just take in this moment. This is cool. Is this how you feel all the time? Because, you know, except for now, of course.
Riley!
All right.
I think they happen back to back. Actually, that's two scenes.
Do they? Yeah, actually, yeah, yeah. You're right. Yeah, and Cage and Kruger didn't know. And for some reason, that scene has always stuck with me. That's the scene that I think about when I think about National Treasure. And I cannot tell you, it's such an inconsequential scene. It's
I think it's a pretty momentous in the arc of Riley, though. I couldn't even Holt keep that going. Yeah. But, I mean, it is kind of his big moment in some dumb way, right?
Yeah. I think because I was – because, again, I was – I think when I was 10 – that was the history tidbit that fascinated me the most out of this whole movie. And so I was like kind of into yeah. that like aspect of it, the daylight savings time thing, where daylight savings time wasn't invented until the 1800s or something. So at the time of the clock would show it's actually an hour earlier. And like, oh, that's a really like interesting twist. I looked into that.
Yeah.
Totally false.
Really? Amazing.
Or apparently, like, it's not totally false, but I guess there was no, At the time that dollar bill was printed, or there was, or that was happening, there was no clock on the Liberty Tower. That didn't get built until much later. So
it wouldn't have even there's
so,
yeah.
Ben Franklin would not have been alive during that time. So
right,
but still, I did enjoy that scene, and seeing it again was like, oh, hey, it's the scene that I remember so vividly for some reason.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. And I other stuff. I mean, I loved. Going back to the Declaration stealing scene. I feel like that's like kind of the highlight of the movie. It's the part of the movie that like everybody talks about, because I feel like everybody thinks this movie is about stealing the Declaration of Independence, but it's really only like. You know, that's like maybe the first like 40 minutes or so, and then the rest of the movie is the continuation of the treasure hunt.
Yeah, there's still like an hour and a half after they or whatever after they steal it. There's so much movie.
Yeah, and the movie like centers around the Declaration of Independence. Like, you know, the next clue they have to find is like the map on the back of the Declaration, so they have to figure out the code and all that stuff, and then they have to go find something that will let them read more of the map of the Declaration of Independence. And like, so it's all centered around it, but it's not about stealing the Declaration because it's already been stolen. Like at around the half hour point. But I do love in that scene, when they are stealing it, Cage runs into Diane Kruger again. Kruger thanks him for sending her the, George Washington pin, which he had referenced in their first meeting. And Cage is, toasting like to high treason. And he's like this, which is pretty funny, and let's say he's like describing how that was what the founding fathers said to themselves when they toasted after they signed the Declaration, and he has a pretty good line reading where he's talking about how you know, they knew if they were caught they would be hanged or gallowed or my personal favorite, their entrails would be cut out and burned.
I think that's the most cagey, quote unquote, moment in the movie.
It's the only time where he like gets a little like off kilter a little bit, you know.
Yeah, he's pretty straight laced for the majority of the movie.
Yeah, I would say so. But yeah, I do think the movie kind of hits fast forward on Nicolas Cage and Diane Kruger's relationship in the movie.
Oh, do you?
I do feel that way. yeah, I mean, they start off as kind of antagonistic towards each other. Diane Kruger's kind of an unwilling participant in Cage's group after she tries to stop him from stealing the Declaration.
But then she wants to know the mystery. Woo!
Which I like about her character. I think she's actually a great character in this movie. You know, she is Cage's equal in every respect in terms of knowing the history and stuff like that. And she gets her own action scenes and stuff. And so I think that's pretty cool, as far as that goes. And you know, but I think, you know, she starts off as kind of antagonistic towards Cage, and then, you know, she gets involved in that car chase. Sean Bean kidnaps her, thinking that she has the Declaration, but she doesn't, but Cage saves her. And then he brings her along to, his dad's house, John Voight, and she, is trying to escape and steal the Declaration back from Cage and bring it back to, the United States government. But Cage isn't letting her go. And then she gets, wrapped up in the mystery, and she gets like really intrigued by what's happening, and so she sticks around with Cage. And then there's like a point, I do like the moment where I think they're in Philadelphia, and Cage hands her the Declaration without even thinking about it, and then he like looks back, and she's like, "Don't worry, I'm not going to steal it. Like, I'm not going to take it.
Right?
Not going to run away." Because at that point, she's like all in, and she's like ready to do it. But then, you know, it kind of like hits fast forward at that point. He randomly kisses her towards the end of the movie. And they're in like the underground secret tunnels that the founding fathers built themselves or whatever. I don't know. Or their slaves built, probably.
It gets a little murky towards the end there.
Yeah. But so you kind of like randomly kisses her, and it's like, oh, I guess they're a couple now. We should care about them.
Sure.
And then the movie ends in a sex joke, which seems weird.
Right?
Is that not what that was? It was. You know, Cage is like, Diane Kruger hands Cage a map, and he's like, what is this a map to? And she like has like a suggestive smile, and then they run towards the house. I assumed that was a sex joke.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
A map to the bed or something. Like,
yeah, I forgot.
And then it just cuts the credits right there. It's like, that's an odd beat.
What
to
a
end,
weird place.
To end your family-friendly Disney movie on.
Yeah. Got to put one in for the parents at some point.
Exactly. I did like, there's like a weird sexual tension though, which I liked, when they were revealing the numbers on the back of the Declaration of Independence, like when they're like leaning over each other and like revealing it, and it's like, we need more juice, we need more heat. You know, I feel like that's like a not super subtle way of like calling attention to the sexual tension there.
I think that's what Ebert is referencing. That
he says that could be
sounds
a Monty
like
Python.
Yeah, it sounds like a Monty Python joke.
You are not wrong in that. I think that's exactly right. I also like the reveal towards the end that Harvey Keitel was a Freemason. I think that was kind of a neat twist.
Yeah, there's just a lot of that kind of stuff in this movie that, like, after it happens, you're like, that was neat. Like,
yeah, it was neat. It's not great, but it's neat. I think kind of the impetus behind National Treasure. There is one bit towards the end where they had to lower the chandelier in the secret room, and I was like shouting at the screen, like, "Keep tapping square! Keep tapping square!"
Oh man!
And I was like, "That's exactly like that." Like, I could almost see like the square symbol pop up in the bottom left corner of the screen.
Yep. Yeah, and then Drake will yell some quip about it.
They're gonna be like, "I'm getting too old for this," or whatever. Sully, you want to give me a hand with this?
Oh my god, that's too real. That's perfect.
Yeah, but I'm coming. I'm coming, Drake. We should perfect. Just do a podcast where we imitate Uncharted. Is what whoa, 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 whoa.
Okay, we need to move on. We can't keep doing this.
But yeah, otherwise, I mean, I was really psyched to see Diane Kruger in this as well. She's a great actress.
Yeah.
Who I wish was in a lot more things. I remember I watched she was on a TV show on FX it aired for like two seasons, The Bridge, which I watched maybe most of the first season. It was pretty good, and she was great in it. But I was also really pleased that she got to use her German accent in this movie. She's obviously from Germany, and you know, I think that actually gives the character a lot more dimension, that she's a character who was from Germany, is also American, and she's like so fascinated by American history and stuff like that. So there is like, I think it adds more dimension to her character instead of just making her American,
right?
And stuff like that. And again, she's like a pretty strong female character, and from 2004, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Because you know, she's at every bit Cage is equal in terms of figuring out the riddles and figuring out the history and you know, participating in the action scenes and all that stuff. So I think that's a pretty neat dynamic this movie has going for it. So Mike, is there anything else that you feel like you want to mention about National Treasure before we move on to Netflix reviews?
No, I think we pretty much touched on all of the very neat things that this movie does.
Yes, the very neat things.
Yeah. Swell.
Yeah, it's a swell time. It's a really fun movie. I'm excited to check out National Treasure 2 when we get to that in 8 episodes. I think it's in 8 episodes. So in approximately 3 years, based on how we're... based on our schedule in recent months.
buckle up, kids.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one, though. So, yeah, let's move on to Netflix reviews for National Treasure. We got some really funny ones today, I think. This is some good ones. Here's a 3-star review of National Treasure. This is an exciting, family-friendly adventure filled with historic facts and lots of hokey theories and a lot of fun. That being said, it does contain a few mild curse words, a comment about an unmarried woman being pregnant.
Oh my god.
A rather awkward scene between the two main characters in the dressing room, and a dress with a bit of cleavage. But all that aside, it is a very fun and enjoyable movie for the family.
Oh my god.
Our old friend, back again.
Back again.
Prudy McPrudeface.
Saving our delicate virgin ears.
Here's a 2-star review of National Treasure. Am I on crazy pills? Yes, the movie was a fun adventure. Yes, I stayed tuned because I love secret passages and riddles. It's what happens when you grow up reading Nancy Drew and watching Inspector Gadget. But for real, Americans making a movie glorifying the fact that they stole a bunch of other countries' artifacts because they didn't think them mature enough to hold the power, so they stole it for themselves, thinking themselves wiser? no one is addressing this? For real? Oh, and now we'll be double heroes because we'll redistribute it to the museums worldwide. A very strange propaganda veiled in something fun. I'd have given it more stars had it not been for this crazy propaganda that no one seems wise enough to pick up on. Sheesh.
Steve Bannon, you gotta have better things to do with your time.
You don't think Steve Bannon would be totally in favor of America stealing all the artifacts from other countries?
That's okay. All right, fair. I did actually, I did enjoy the detail that in his exposition, Christopher Plummer mentions that the Founding Fathers had to keep the, or wanted to keep the treasure out of the hands of the British at the time of the Revolution.
Right.
And then Sean Bean and all of his crew are from the UK, which I thought was a neat little detail.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of neat. That's nice. And again, another neat detail from National Treasure.
Yeah.
Here's a one-star review of National Treasure. Ugh, seems like the Freemasons bankrolled this pro-Freemason quasi-educational film as PR for their cause. Badly acted, laughable directing at times. Life's too short. Don't waste your time.
Wow, Steve Bannon back again. The globalist Freemasons.
Yeah, exactly. That's the Steve Bannon one right there. Here's a one-star review of National Treasure. I was gravely confused by this movie. It was trying to be a good action movie where Cage was dealing with bad guys while trying to solve the mystery, but while he's in the middle of a good, epic gunfight, he has to educate the movie watchers about the three maces in the middle of the gunfight. I mean, seriously, give the educational factor when you're done having a gunfight with bad guys, not during.
That warrants a one-star review. That's amazing.
That one scene just took him out of the movie entirely.
Yeah.
I'm here to watch guns. I'm not here to learn Nicolas Cage. Here's a two-star review of National Treasure. Nicolas Cage has difficulty discerning a want from a need in this PG-rated family thriller when he decides to steal the Declaration of Independence. Once again, Cage teaches children that theft is okay when all the odds are stacked against you and greed is a driving motivation, all the while concealing said motivation as a personal obsession for history and the Founding Fathers. Cage's character inspires anarchy in a pre-Revelations America.
Holy shit.
I preferred his performance in City of Angels rather than this Indiana Jones ripoff with a patriotic twist. I love Anarchy in a Pre-Revelations America is the name of my new band, actually.
Oh my God.
So pretty excited about that one. Here's a 5-star review of National Treasure. I first watched this movie quite a few years ago when I did my imagination and curiosity got the better of me. I've heard of the Templars and Freemasons before watching this movie, but didn't know it still existed until I Googled it. I am now a third-degree Master Mason.
Oh my god.
And if it was for this movie, I would not have thought about joining. Awesome movie and excellent storyline. So maybe that pro-Freemason propaganda thing had a point.
Yeah. What a twist.
What a twist. And finally, I got one last one. Here's a 4-star review of National Treasure. Nicolas Cage, check. Really, that's all you need to know. Other than that, it's a pretty entertaining action-adventure movie. It lost 1 star because my parents love this movie.
Oh, my God.
So thanks, wow. 10-year-old. That's
Yeah, fair.
That's something. So, yeah, that's the Netflix reviews for National Treasure. I think that's the best crop of reviews we've had in quite a while.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. You did a really good job.
Thank you. I got those in like 5 minutes. all right, Mike. I think that wraps up our review of National Treasure. We both really enjoyed it, and I'm pretty pleased about that. So that's pretty cool. Where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. And plus, I got work at crookedscoreboard.com too. You can check that out there. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That is Mike DiCriscio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, you can subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. You can help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones. It's hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks for another episode of The Complete Works, in which we'll be talking about Nicolas Cage's role in Andrew Niccol's 2005 film, Lord of War. So kind of interested about that. I've only seen a couple of Andrew Niccol films. I've seen Gattaca, and I've seen In Time. Gattaca is great. In Time, not so much. So
that's a great.
That's a great. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Plus, keep an eye out for a film bookcast where we're going to be talking Dunkirk, man. I'm excited about that. I'm jealous of you. You're seeing it in a 70mm IMAX.
Glorious. This weekend. 70mm, yeah.
I live in Backwards Hickville. That's the official name of my town. And so I'll be seeing it in a regular old theater. I might as well watch it on my phone, you know?
Yes. Yeah. What's even the point?
What's even the point if I can't see it in 70mm IMAX? But we'll definitely be talking about that next week. So thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.
It's the Declaration of Independence gone in 60 seconds, because we're down to business. A national treasure. He's my rock, 8 foot tall with a 9 foot cock. Bangkok dangerous. He might drive angry, set the screen on fire, just like Big Daddy. Don't be hating, he's an Oscar winner. Eats bitches for lunch and more bitches for dinner. Oh, Nick Cage.